From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Distance can be hard on any couple, but what if you or your spouse are serving in Iraq or Afghanistan? A new study says failed relationships can lead to soldier suicide. Army suicide rates are the highest they've been in 26 years. That's the latest data from 2006. Half of those deaths were men and women who had yet to see their 25th birthday. A third were serving in Iraq or Afghanistan. For the rest of the story and more, we've got our weekly Reporters Roundtable. With us are the world editor for the Miami Herald, John Yearwood, Ernie Suggs, urban affairs reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and Clarence Page, a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Welcome, and let me jump right in. Ernie, what
Yes.
about these suicide numbers? Should America be concerned?
Well, I think the biggest concern is how different this war is and how much stress these officers and these soldiers are under. This is not our grandfather's war in terms of, you know, we're in and out. We're fighting an enemy that we don't know anything about on the ground. Our soldiers are over there for longer periods of time. They're getting redeployed more often. And it becomes a stressful situation on your personal life as well as your family life. So these things are sadly, not that surprising.
I'm going to move on to some sound from the U.S. Army. Colonel Elspeth Ritchie is a psychiatry consultant to the Army Surgeon General. From a Pentagon press conference, she said,
"What we have found is not a direct relationship so far between deployment, combat, and suicide. However, we do know that frequent deployments put a real strain on relationships, especially on marriages."
John, is that circular logic?
A lot of things, Farai, puts a strain on relationships. But what I think about this, Farai, is that this is not particularly new. As you may know, going back to the Gulf War, there was also a spike in suicides. I think the military certainly could have anticipated this and prepared for it. Based on the news conference yesterday and other information that I've read, I'm not quite sure the military actually did much to plan for this anticipated spike. If you look at what happened, the numbers are about as high as they were back during the Gulf War back in 91.
Ernie, we have been seeing a precipitous drop in the number of African Americans serving in the military, 40% drop in terms of recruitment and retention. Do you think that, among other things, the specter of suicide, the specter of family breakup is causing this?
No, I mean, I don't. I think that I think African-American men are seeing that this is a war that is not very popular. I don't think that suicide or the specter of a family life plays into it. I think it may play a small role, but I think the larger role is the ongoing unpopularity of the war, other options out there, college, working. I just think those are different factors. I think this plays a smaller role in it,
and
in those drops in numbers.
And do you think that there's going to be any real damage to the Bush administration's overall support of the war, or will people just take this in stride?
If that's to me, I think people will take it in stride. It's another blip or another, you know, notch against this war that, you know, these men and women are killing themselves. But I don't think it will adversely hurt Bush or the administration in any other way that it would have.
John, I want to move on to another topic. There is some hot news coming out of the Washington Post today. It has to do with an incident when Alberto Gonzalez, then the White House counsel, visited an ailing John Ashcroft, then attorney general, in his hospital room. Now, this key domestic surveillance program was about to expire. Ashcroft's deputy refused to renew it. Now, Gonzalez says his visit to Ashcroft in the hospital was friendly, but Comey says the visit, Comey being the deputy, says the visit was an attempt to circumvent his authority and take advantage of Ashcroft while he was physically weak. Yesterday, the FBI director released notes he took after the meeting that seemed to contradict Gonzalez. He said he found Ashcroft feeble, barely to articulate, and stressed. Those are all quotes. Now, he was not at the meeting. Do these notes, John, change the debate and undermine already beleaguered Gonzalez?
for what I think it does, certainly the meeting is not new. We've been reporting, and others have been reporting on this meeting for quite some time. Ashcroft's recollection of what happened differs greatly from what others who were at the meeting recall. What I think these new series of notes from the FBI director does is that it adds to the body of evidence that's out there that contradicts or to some extent adds clarity to what Gonzalez knew or didn't know about the meetings, and indeed what he recollects about what happened. The sense is several legislators on the Hill are going to look at these new notes and say and renew their call for the Attorney General to step down.
Clarence, let me bring you.
You can certainly expect the heat to continue.
Clarence, let me bring you into this. So you've got Ashcroft lying in a hospital bed. You have Gonzalez allegedly harassing him. You have this program, the domestic surveillance, still being very controversial. Gonzalez caught up in the firing of federal prosecutors, allegedly. Are you surprised with all of this that Gonzalez is still hanging on? And secondly, that it was senior advisor Karl Rove who stepped down this week, and that there's a new announcement by Tony Snow, the White House press secretary, that he's going to leave as well. Why do you think those gentlemen are stepping out while Gonzalez continues to hang on, specifically in terms of the president making that decision?
Well, there's two big reasons why Gonzalez is hanging on. One is personal loyalty. President Bush has shown repeatedly that personal loyalty means everything to him. That's why he nominated Harriet Myers for the Supreme Court, which even shocked fellow Republicans. And the other thing is that the Justice Department, quite frankly, is in a state of disarray right now. To remove the Attorney General at this point would cause even more chaos, and you've got confirmation hearings then, that whole process to worry about up on Capitol Hill. But many people have been urging, and I mean President Bush's supporters and associates, that many have been urging him to nudge Gonzalez on out of there and bring in somebody new, even like say Sandra Day O'Connor, somebody who would be a figure that would bring people together right now. But he's not doing it.
So you think Gonzalez is going to go the distance?
It looks that way at this point. We certainly are seeing, as you mentioned, an exodus of key White House people, largely because President Bush's biggest agenda items like Social Security reform and immigration have really they're really dead in the water right now. He's moving into a strange kind of lame duck period for the remainder of his term, looks like, where the big agenda items are overseas, the war in Iraq being central, and the war on terror. Karl Rove, that's not his specialty, and he's gone off apparently to work on the Bush legacy and his own. Tony Snow, of course, has had his cancer problems to worry about, and right now August is a good time for a lot of people at both the White House and up on Capitol Hill to talk about leaving.
All right, Clarence, we're going to turn now to a column that you wrote this week for the Chicago Tribune. It was in response to a study that says when a neighborhood becomes integrated, it causes stress for those who live there, at least for the short term. So briefly, what are some of the other things the study said?
Well, the study, first of all, is by Robert Putnam, a Harvard professor, a famous for a book called Bowling Alone that came out a few years ago and talked about how civic engagement it has been in decline in America over the last few decades. More people are bowling, but they're bowling alone, not in bowling leagues. And the same kind of thing can be seen in a lot of different aspects of civic life. His new study stirs up so much controversy is a continuation of his research that looks at what factors lead to civic disengagement. And one big factor, much to his surprise, is diversity, racial and ethnic diversity in a community, at least in the short term.
I'm sorry to jump in, but we only have a little bit of time. I want to get both Ernie and John in. Ernie, you're an urban affairs reporter. What do you think of the idea that integration causes at least some temporary turbulence? Is that just common sense, or is it worrying?
No, I think it's common sense. I think that's been the case for the last, 50, 60 years when integration, people were moving into different neighborhoods. I also think there's a value in ethnic neighborhoods and preserving ethnic pockets in societies and cities. But I'm not surprised, nor is it a shock, that there is this tension. I live in an integrated neighborhood, and, it's always an adjustment, but I think we're getting past it. Once you can get past that first year or so, it's fine.
John, Miami is one of these places where racial and ethnic groups move around each other like tectonic plates in an earthquake. What do you see?
Well, Farai, it seems clear to me. Certainly, if you have a choice, at least in my case, I would prefer to live in a diverse neighborhood. However, this study does not surprise me a great deal. When we think about why many of us move out to live in diverse neighborhoods, sometimes it doesn't necessarily have as much to do with our neighbors as it has to do with the fact that we want our kids to go to better schools, we want better housing value and things like that. So it doesn't, how many of us know who our neighbors are? I know some of my neighbors, but I certainly don't want to sit here and claim to know all of them. And I live in a diverse neighborhood. If you look at the core of the study, I don't think it's a great surprise to a lot of people.
All right. Well, we will definitely keep an eye on America's diversity, something we are committed to covering. Clarence, Ernie, and John, thanks so much.
Thank you, Farai.
We've been talking with John Yearwood, world editor for the Miami Herald. He joined us from member station WLRN in Miami, Florida. Ernie Suggs is urban affairs reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and he spoke with us from Georgia Public Broadcasting. And finally, Clarence Page, columnist for the Chicago Tribune.